You're listening to Maneuvering Mondays, a podcast about transforming work culture.
This is the second part of the episode, and in this part, we have invited one or more guest experts to share their best advice to Marie from Zebra Apps. Okay, so your hosts today are Anne-Katrine Seier
and Ivana Rosendahl.
And for this commentary episode, we have invited one guest speaker to discuss the story part. Welcome to Patrick Sheridan. So Patrick is a change management expert with many years of experience in working with leadership and management teams to facilitate organizational transformations. And Patrick, you're currently working in FLSmidth, where you focus on people changing culture in the HR department.
Yes, that's true.
Is there anything you want to add to this description?
Yeah, well, I guess I can. People change and culture, that's like sort of a huge, massive banner for basically anything and everything that moves in the company because it entails so many different things and that spans the life cycle or the lifespan of any company. So it's just sort of a demystification of they're very fine words, but it's basically anything and everything that moves and breathes in the company is entwined with the culture and people.
Well, we're going to start with a check-in question before we get to discussing the episode. So I would like us all to check in with a story from the past week, either at work or in your private lives. And I will start, then I'll go to Patrick, and then we'll end with Anne-Katrine. So in the past week, I have been working on a number of very high-pressure projects at work that came out pretty suddenly. And to me, one of the things that I have been reflecting on is the importance of understanding why we're doing something. Because if we understand why we're doing it, then it's much easier to rally all the people around it to make sure that we can get stuff done. And Patrick, any stories or reflections from the past week for you?
Yeah, I guess I'll also take one from my professional life in that, again, I guess I was surprised that working on a daily basis with people in a HR department who were change management, you would is what they would do every day. But when when it's expected that they themselves should be part of that change, then they struggle with putting themselves in the receiver or the person who has to practice that it's okay that they can accept being an advisor, but when they also actually have to participate in change, that struggle is equal to anybody else.
Well, I certainly know that from my own life working with change management and facilitating organizational change in general, that does not necessarily make change easier when it happens to yourself. I don't have a professional story to tell from the past weeks, as I'm on maternity leave during the first episodes of this podcast, but I will share that I learned something new this week, being that I need to get a lot better at giving my baby tummy time. She is 4 months now, and she likes to just lay on her back and play with the toys, which looks really nice, but I found out recently that every time I put her down, I should in fact put her on the tummy, until she gets tired. So now we will start this new strategy and see if she will start rolling soon. So Patrick, just to get started here, and just top of mind, so no pressure to remember everything, but how would you describe in your own words what the story you read was about for today?
So I think what I read was a very classic or a typical situation of a company that has gone through a tremendous amount of acceleration and change in a short amount of time, and that even though their product seemed to be going well, that the culture of the company was not being focused on, and that was experiencing a high volume of resignations, and that was like a wake-up call for the HR department, who did not seem to have insight into either their processes to manage that proactively, nor did they have the insight into find the reasoning why it happened, even though they reacted. So I think it was the case of, I'd say, business or commercial ambitions accelerating to leave the culture of a company way behind, and thereby also the employees.
Yeah, and you're the first guest that we have in this podcast that actually works in HR. So I am curious to get your perspective on how would this look like in a good scenario? What would the HR department be able to do?
I'll defend my own HR-ness, and I mean that for the whole HR community, is that sometimes I feel sad when people think, oh, there's a problem, HR will fix that. And that's both when it's got to do with things like culture or that the canteen quality has gone down. So it goes from many different areas. So this is just like sort of, I guess, a disclaimer that HR gets labeled to fix everything and anything that's got to do with many things. So I think they should have had some mechanisms in place to constantly take the temperature of their company. And probably if they were conscious of they were going through a sort of very meaningful transformation and expansion, they should have also have kept HR in both budgetary and also work-wise into those plans, and maybe have worked in some sort of employee survey and engagement strategy to make sure the monitoring of that was happening in real time, so they'd stay in touch with how their employees were viewing that. And that they that one of the key things with HR is that HR cannot fix it. What they could do is enable line managers with data and with recommendations about what's going on in real time. But it seems like that was a miss at the moment, because there seems like the distance between the employees' perception of what was happening and the very insulated HR was a vast difference. So I think the proactiveness of when you're going through, it should be anything, not just when you're going through a transformation at all time, but especially when you're going through a transformation or an expansion, that you include monitoring and mitigating of cultural and personnel staffing challenges involved in that, and have a constant view on that.
This leads me to another question. What is your sense of the story, the interplay between HR and the leadership in the company in general? Because these people, they resign to HR and not to their newest manager.
Yeah, precisely. And I think, as far as I remember now, the piece like where the CEO jokingly says to the HR development person there, Maria, that, you know, this is your thing, fix it. And again, it's just that like sort of labeling that, you know, we're doing our business, so HR just sort of has to maybe, you know, jump through the hoops and make sure it works well. But it's HR for me is a support function that can enable either through data or through training or through many different offerings. But the responsibility is a line manager of how the culture is, and it's not HR. It's programs can be sponsored and can be maybe facilitated in a HR company or department, but the owners and the people who live it has to be line managers and every person in the department.
Thank you. Sorry, before I just wanted to add that I also made a note for the section about that people are leaving, and it seems that, like you say, Patrick, that there's been a rapid expansion, but also that there seems to be this focus on profit over the original purpose of the company, and that's a kind of a turnoff for many of the employees, that now it's all about the commercial gain and not the original purpose that they actually signed up for when they joined the company.
Yeah. Yes, agreed.
So Patrick, if you were in Marie's shoes and were suddenly tasked with fixing this retention problem, as they call it, what kind of tools, theories, or models would you pull out of your sleeve to try to understand what is happening?
Well, I think first of all, we need to fix the engagement so that there is a credible insight both from HR and through the line management into the temperature of the employees. And that would be right now, if I was in the position what she was in right now, we're talking about damage control, right? So we can't really do anything proactive. we need to be able to work with those internal communications and engagement through line managers. And there's several ways you can do that. I mean, we take communication alone. So obviously the line of communication and the choices that have been made, as you said, Anna-Katrina, as we mentioned, is very much focused on the commercial gains for the company, thereby probably leaving the more personal and sort of humanistic kind of appeal that should be engaging people also. And I think they would need a serious communication strategy or campaign, nearly, I think, which is actually credible and not something that will be perceived as you know, speaking just because of damage control. So that means also working very heavily and intensely with the top management in trying to show them that this is their responsibility and getting them to generate a narrative that they both believe in and that can be engaging. And then I think there'll be a very heavily, it all depends how many resources one has, but we would need to have a constant contact through surveys, maybe weekly surveys, and that can be done very cheaply with employees to ask them either anonymously to, so we could gather data, so we could actually give this data to line managers, so they can address what the issues are. The issues are internal communications about priorities, if there's about someone says it was too much bureaucracy, whatever, to start to fish out what the actual issues are. I mean, there's one part in the story where the difference between the guy going to the defense place was a free soda or not a free soda. So, I mean, that's not the issue, right? So the issue is definitely internal communication. It's focus on who they are as a company and probably to reestablish the values that they originally had in place before they started on this massive transformation. So in short, just to recap, so in a concentrated engagement with top management to generate a good internal communication strategy, and then a good solid engagement strategy through the line management to ensure that contact with employees, that both in real-time information is coming back, so you can start to mitigate what was happening there with the retention problem.
So I think it's really great to, like, your suggestion of establishing this kind of feedback cycle or some sort of insights into the temperature in the organization. But I'm also a bit, I think always surveys are always a bit of a tricky you can say tool to use, because it, you know, people can perceive it as something that takes up a lot of their time, but you just said that it could be done cheaply. What are your experiences with using these types of internal surveys to take temperatures?
So where I work, we use something called PECON, which is a part of Workday, which is a larger survey mechanism. It will be expensive. It wouldn't be the kind of thing you would roll out if you were basically just trying to do some damage control. I think, you know, whether it's one or the other, whether it's even SurveyMonkey or even just an SMS or an email that you'd send into anonymously from somewhere, I mean, there's various different mechanisms you can look at. It's I think the whole question is getting two or three questions that resonate. Mm. And whatever platform you use, I think, you know, there's so many ways you can brainstorm on that. I'm sure people from a digital area will be able to maybe even give the best way to that. But it was more the sort of giving people an environment of that they can answer anonymously, and that this is a dedicated attempt from management to meet the employees again on face value, so they need to know what's on the mind. And I think it would be very important to ask questions, two or three questions that they could build on. Again, the questions and the answers themselves won't solve the problem. It's just enough to get a more focused conversation started between line management and employees. And that's where true engagement comes. I mean, I'm not a good big believer, even though we exercise it here, many do, where monthly or bi-monthly surveys where you answer 10 questions and people say, okay, that's our engagement done. Engagement with employees must be supported on a daily basis by their line manager, where true connections are made.
Absolutely. Yeah. And I think also just the importance of using the actual outcomes of the surveys, so it doesn't feel like just answering, you know, something and then never hearing anything, and then HR can, or the managers can check off a checkbox of now I have engaged.
Yeah,
so no, I totally agree.
Gathering that data and maybe come in with recommendations to line management, and based on these answers, we can see that the area has got to do with management credibility. Here are 5 points where you can start to talk about to build up that credibility, and that may take you X amount of months, but it means that you have to build it into your management style on a daily basis. So it would be with that kind of structure that I think I would, you know, go at it. Again, it's just to close the gap of damage control. And then if you get there, then you can start talking about implementing more proactive, longer term solutions that can ensure a constant flow of openness and engagement.
There is one of the employees that is resigning who tells Marie, you have no idea what's going on. And that touches upon exactly what you're saying, that in this company specifically, there are no tools for managing the people system. It's all a peer-to-peer relationship, and there are no steering mechanisms. And then it's very hard as an HR function to be able to fulfill their role.
Yeah, true. And if I have to speak more to that, I mean that I think there was even some confusion about the gathering of exit interviews and the categorization of that. So it just seemed as if it actually rating it, if it read like a very dysfunctional HR department, because they seemed very insulated and totally oblivious to what the real life was on the other side of the glass wall. But yeah, it seemed as if they'd lost all contact in using the most basic tools and the most basic practices just to ensure that there is some sort of feedback loops in place with employees.
But I would like to dive a little bit deeper into the dysfunction of this HR department, because we have Marie, who represents development HR, and then we have her peer, Paul, who represents HR operations. And then they have their vice president of HR, whose name is Mark. And one of the experiences we see in this part of the story is that Marie doesn't even know that exit interviews are being collected. Mm-hmm. And when she asks to see them, they are provided to her in a stack of printed paper on her desk. What do you think about that story?
It just seemed as if this complacency had set into that HR department, because perhaps they were doing so well commercially they were selling their product, and they were focusing on Germany and they're focusing on expansion, but they forgot to actually take care of what their core employees were doing. Even while recording exit interviews, they weren't doing that.
What is the purpose of exit interviews?
I think the purpose of exit interviews for me is to ensure that you build up your knowledge of your retention strategy. What can you do to mitigate and learn from why people are leaving, and how this can be changed or adjusted or improved in such a way that if it's affecting other employees. It's also that, you know, the exit, most people, when they, if they're at least in my experience, if they're honest with exit interviews, it gets a bit sort of personal. So you have to actually really analyze what's being said, or at least ask some good questions, so you can apply any adjustments or changes to the broader bunch of employees who could be affected by this. So I think it's a question of trying to tease out what is maybe a personal reason, or it could be a personal reason because of the existing reporting line manager, which is one thing. But they're also being pointed out about things like, you know, that there are areas that we can learn from exit interviews that can help strengthen retention of employees.
Makes sense. So it's a wasted opportunity. Here we have this tool that could actually have helped HR contribute to avoiding some of the dynamics that we're seeing in this company. And it's just being wasted because they're not used properly.
Precisely. Yeah. And that's because of the dysfunctionality, in the HR department, that they didn't know their own processes and they weren't aware of how they should use this data and who should own it and stuff like that.
I also just wanted to get back to the problems in the HR department as a department, because you talked about how it's clear that that the processes are not really in place, and this shows because they don't know what's going on in the company, and there's like a glass wall between them and the rest of the employees. But also internally, clearly there's issues, since it seems that they don't know what each other are doing, and they don't have any common. They seem very divided as a department. How would you address that to kind of get more alignment internally?
Well, I'm smiling because that's one of the things I've spent a lot of my time on this week, actually, is we have a rather large HR department here and where I work, and we're just implementing a HR operating model that has been on its way for a long time, but has been a bit slow in getting realized. The whole thing about that is collaboration and understanding about what each department does. HR is built up of many different disciplines that actually don't really speak to each other on a regular basis, and generally just sort of throw things over the fence and just say, oh, well, that's compensation, or that's rewards, or that's HR operations, or whatever, and there's no insight. And then suddenly when you change an operating model where some of these things have to be moved from department to department, nobody can understand it. So I think in some way, some sort of collaborative approach that departments, not only department heads, but departments get to share knowledge and get insight into how each other works, and get an understanding of the complete life cycle of every HR offering, or every offering that a human resource department stands for. I think there's way not enough of that in every company, is this interdepartmental collaboration. And for me, that's a huge key. I also think that there's too much emphasis put on digitalization, and that digitalization will solve every single thing. It's like, it's like these things come up every now and then that, oh, well, we're going digital. Now we have Workday, or now we have SuccessFactors, or now we have this. So now we have a complete digitalized HR process that everyone gets notified about. But at the end of the day, no matter what happens, this within HR and outside of HR, the company is about people and it's about interactions. So I think heightening collaboration that's a big thing for me.
Yeah, I agree. And I think just to also add to that, in the last episode, we talked a lot about the tension between Marie and the VP of HR, Mark, as it seems like there are some unresolved things going on there. If you're curious to hear more about that, you can listen to the pilot episode.
And it's I just want to add to something like that, because it's something that we've tried. So last year we in FL Smith we purchased a large company in Germany from ThyssenKrupp Mining, with 2,600 new employees globally. And their culture was very German, and I don't mean that in a derogatory way, but I mean in a different way, in that German ways of working traditionally are very hierarchical, and that each employee will get their information from their line manager. Whereas working in Scandinavia or other parts of Europe, even, it's very relationship built based. So you get all your information maybe from 12 different people before you can take a decision. Where in Germany, they'll wait until their boss will tell them exactly the information they need. And that whole daring to establish relationships two levels above yourself or two levels below yourself is a massive jump, even for our German colleagues in our HR department. And getting them to think like that is in itself a piece of, for want of a better word, change management, and that is we take for granted, I think, here when we're working in the Scandinavian, that it's all very flat and loose. But when you move outside, it can be quite a shocker that kind of thing is, and that can hinder. I'm not just talking about HR departments, but also the that you can actually establish. The whole point was that there was the established relationship between Mark and Maria, I think, was a bit sort of not as healthy as maybe it should have been. And that's because they just didn't speak to each other as people. You know, like, I enjoy the fact that I can go upstairs to my chief HR officer and knock on the door and both drink coffee and also talk about hard stuff at the same time. And that's quite accessible for me, as well as going to anywhere and speaking to a person who's much on a whole different level than me. So, yeah.
And we also see that in the story, actually, that the CEO of the company, Natalie, she's the one who tasks Marie with fixing the retention problem. Yeah. And Mark, the VP of HR, he feels jealous or maybe a little bit resentful of the fact that Marie was given this task and not him. Yeah. And then Natalie advises Marie to be careful not to bruise Mark's ego in the process. So we see those kind of the hierarchy versus the relationship structure being battled out. I'm curious about Marie's part of the dysfunction in this HR department. She's the one speaking directly to employees. People are resigning to her. Is she part of the problem? Is she creating some of the dynamics that aren't working out?
I mean, I don't know if that's a yes or no answer, but it probably is both yes or no, because she seems to be a person with a conscience, and she's asking questions, and she's stopping up, and she has a lot of empathy when the first person, I think I read that when Jason is leaving, so she feels it sad. So, but on the other hand, I think as far as I remember, she's been there, was it a year or something? I can't remember, it was in the piece. But the fact that these lack of processes are still catching her by surprise, she has, of course, dropped the ball on that. I mean, her title was HR Development, I think, was it?
Mm.
So she should have been all over that from day one about what are the processes, what are the development channels we can use, how are we gathering data, how are we viewing how our employees have it, or and what kind of temperature that there is there and not there. It seemed like every piece of information was a surprise to her, which would be alarming, I think, for me. But on the other hand, she also has you know, an empathetic approach to it that she wants to also to fix it as well. So I think it's about, yes, everybody contributes to dysfunctionality, everybody, you know. But she seemed as if she wants to do something about it also. Yeah.
And if you were to imagine what happens next in the story, what do you think would be the next things?
Let me say now what would happen. I can say what I would hope would happen.
Yes, that would be helpful.
I think what I would hope would happen is that a lot of the top management, the head of HR and Marie and Natalie, that they'd find some common ground to address this as one complete team, but the complete top management together with HR, and actually took ownership of this in a way that they could address it as a combined team, and that they would first of all start to do some damage control and emit some of these huge vacuums there are in perceptions of what the company is, in a way with integrity, and then after that try to implement some structured approaches to make sure that these kind of things doesn't happen again, and they're actually building on you know, say data, but at least on book data, but also at least about good practices, management practices of engagement with their employees. That's what I would hope would happen.
Okay, I think we have to wrap up now. So just before we end today, is there anything you think we can learn from this episode, Patrick?
When you say we, I'm thinking we as people who are professional people and work with things challenges like
yes,
this.
Absolutely.
Yeah, and I'm again, it's that don't focus on things like commercial expansion and business development without thinking that culture and integrity from top management should also be tied into that and should move along with that. It shouldn't stop a business from running. And a business is there to make money, and a business is there to generate money so it can pay its employees. But on the other hand, if it hasn't got an engaged workforce, it is definitely going to suffer, and that's what you can see there. So I think that's number one, is just don't forget the cultural part of your journey when you're doing that. And also that you get some folks in place that, you know, I have an ambiguous relationship to this next sentence to say that put processes in place, because I'm probably not as structured as I'd like to be to think that everything should be follow a process. But I think once you can say, well, if you can speak to a good practice that everyone can follow, if that's all the process, call the process or a good practice, I think, and you put that into, make that as part of the culture, I think it also helps that you get the flow of information back and forward, that you can actually start to get some insight on what's going on.
So Patrick, if our listeners would like to engage further in conversation with you, where could they find you?
They can find me on LinkedIn. I think I'm the only Patrick Sheridan who resides in Copenhagen with that name. And there they can always contact me.
Thank you so much for coming on the show.
Thank you. Thanks very much for having me.
What are your thoughts on Marie's situation? Have you had a similar experience? And what would you have done? Join the conversation on our LinkedIn page and let's maneuver Mondays together.